As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
In today's episode of the Sixers Beat, Rich and I dive into the listener mailbag, talking about a whole host of topics, from how the Sixers offense will succeed against playoff-caliber defenses, which playoff seed is most optimal for the Sixers, what is the biggest area the Sixers can clean up to improve their playoff chances, and what Shake Milton needs to do in order to make an impact. Enjoy the podcast. All right, welcome everybody. This is Derek Bodner, joined by Rich Hoffman on the Sixers Beat, part of the Athletics Podcast Network. How you doing, Rich?
Derek, I'm doing great. 4 days in LA. I don't think I would want to live here full time, but there are worse places on the NBA road trip for sure.
You know, I mostly consider myself an East Coast person. I mean, I've lived here my whole life, but I do like good weather. And every time I visit there, I wonder a little bit whether or not I could take that lifestyle. I could certainly take the weather. I don't know if I could take the lifestyle. And right now, because over here in the East Coast, we're about to hit a couple of days in the 40s again. So I am certainly jealous of you.
It's just everything's a little too spread out here. Like, I don't know exactly where to stay. I stay by the airport because it's kind of close to the beaches, which I like. But that's pretty far from Staples Center. That was a trip the first time I covered a game out here. I was like, oh my God, Staples Center is really far away from all the other places I've heard of out here. So, it's a nice little road trip. Finish up in Phoenix. It's a good way for the Sixers to end their West Coast swing. They have already done the hard mountain time zone part of this. And you know what? They got a couple wins too.
And they got a couple more tough games coming up here against the Suns in Phoenix and then come back home against the Bucks. After that, the final, eight or so games? I can't do math. The final stretch is easy. Seven games is easy after that, but they do still have two more tough ones here to get out. We are recording this on Saturday before they play the Suns on Sunday, obviously. We're going to take a little bit of a step back, in part because the schedule is so hectic. Talking too much about a game is problematic, and also in part because I feel like lately we have just been talking a lot about games. So take a step back, do a couple mailbag questions, let you get on your way over to Phoenix.
That was good. You sounded like a pilot saying, like, we're going to get you over to Phoenix real quick.
Not promising an easy landing here, but we will get you there, hopefully. Actually, I can't even promise you that. We'll see. We'll see what happens. Flip a coin. Maybe you get there. Who knows? Before that happens, though, we will get a mailbag out of the way. This one from Robert Ocean. Which one of the following Sixers weaknesses, if approved upon, would make the biggest difference? He lists out transition defense, defensive rebounding, and slow first quarter starts.
Which one would make the biggest difference?
If they improved upon it, yeah.
I think it's pretty clearly defensive rebounding, I would say. Just because, I mean, you saw it a little bit in that game last night against the Clippers. Like, they got stops. And when they get stops, they can push the ball, which gives Harden favorable matchups to attack. It gives Embiid favorable matchups to attack. And it's just, I don't know, there's just something to, like, a game like the Raptors, it's just so deflating. Like, when you just cannot grab a defensive rebound. You know, slow first quarter starts, like, I do think, like I wrote about this today, like the starting lineup is great. So, you know, I don't expect that to like really continue quite as much. And it frankly, it didn't in the Clippers game, at least.
It feels like they either have a real slow start or they just completely annihilate the other team in the first quarter. So since the Harden acquisition, they have a negative 0.2 net rating in the first quarter. That is compared to prior to the Harden acquisition, they were plus 4.8. So they've definitely been significantly worse since Harden arrived, which doesn't really make a whole lot of sense, but yeah. But you've had a couple games here, like the other night, where they just blow teams out, and I think has been skewing that where it looks a little more competitive than it actually is. I think they've been slow more often than not.
Well, and yeah, the game against Brooklyn, like that should count double. That right, was horrible. Right. Like you really got your ass kicked in that game. But I think it's definitely defensive rebounding. You know, transition defense, like, look, I think that's going to be important. But as I've said, I kind of think that can get schemed around to a point, and that will be solved. That has gotten better. It has gotten better. In the past few games as well. But the defensive rebounding, that's something I'm going to worry about. Like, I know this got a lot of engagement last night when I tweeted it, but Doc was screaming at DeAndre in the first quarter when he let Hartenstein get two offensive rebounds and the Clippers score, and he calls timeout and he starts clapping in his face, like, let's go, let's go. Which obviously that inspired many a tweet from people who don't want to see DeAndre playing. But yeah, I think that's the biggest of the three. And, you know, we'll see. Like, Harden had a big game on the boards last night, but it's still an area I worry about with this team, though.
Yeah, I think some people will dismiss transition defense because there's sort of like the saying that the game slows down in the playoffs. It doesn't really slow down quite as much as you think it does. I went back and looked at last year's regular season and playoffs. Transition possessions accounted for 15.4% in the regular season. We're talking average. 14.1% in the playoffs. So it does slow down a little bit. It's not as drastic as you think it is. Maybe I didn't break that down by round in the playoffs, so maybe it gets a little bit slower in the third and fourth rounds, but I think it's probably not quite as severe. So being a better transition defensive team would certainly help. Like, it's not like you can just ignore that because the game quote unquote slows down, but I agree with you. Actually, since the Harden acquisition, they have been the eighth best defensive rebounding team in the league, which it doesn't feel that way.
Doesn't feel that way.
But it's also, you know, they're 16th overall. So they're right around 20th or so before the Harden acquisition, but they're also the worst offensive rebounding team in the league. So that disparity is going to look a lot worse. And part of that reason that they're the worst offensive rebounding team in the league is because they're terrible in transition. So you're kind of picking your poison a little bit.
And Doc's telling them, just get back.
Yeah. So these all kind of, or at least two of the three sort of connect. I think the slow first quarter starts, they'll figure that out. That starting lineup is too good. I don't have too big of a concern. It's weird. It frustrates me, but it's not really my long-term concern. My longer-term concern is to your point, defensive rebounding, I think.
The slow first quarter starts were noticeable, but as we've kind of talked about when we laugh about people asking about, you know, the third quarter or some segment in the game during a press conference, like a lot of that is random if there isn't like a specific lineup or very specific tactical thing that is going on at that point.
Yeah. So I guess what I would say, if the slow starts continue, that might be the biggest problem, but I just don't expect that to continue. So I will sort of dismiss that one. All right, we will go to Sean O'Connor at S. O'Connor 76, old LB pal. Do you think that the Sixers offense with Embiid and Harden remains elite against playoff defenses and referees, given that part of the struggles they've had in the past with getting the same whistle?
I'll let you go first.
I think it will be very good. I think this is one thing where the whistle doesn't dry up quite as much as I think we believe it does. I think the pace slows down, so you have fewer possessions, so the overall quantity of free throws drops, but the free throw rate, the frequency you're getting line doesn't. It does, sort of like transition, it does drop, just not quite as much as we say it does. And I think Embiid and Harden do get, you know, will they get fewer fouls? A little bit, but probably not, like, it's not going away. I think it's much more that the quality of the competition increases, and you can competently defend Harden with multiple defenders. And that's my bigger concern. And I mean, quite honestly, my biggest concern is that Harden just doesn't look like Harden more often than not. do I have concern that Harden might get shut down, relatively speaking, not completely, but relatively speaking in the playoffs? Yeah, but I think that's more because Harden just doesn't look right, or at least consistently right, with his hamstring than it is, you know, I mean, look, offense is always going to be tougher in the playoffs. We've seen that with Joel. He has struggled. You know, part of the benefit for him of Ben Simmons being on the roster is he had his second round performance has hadn't quite gotten a scrutiny in terms of his efficiency in the second round. He's had some struggles there. We sort of overlooked that because he's so important defensively, and he still is producing. It's just way less efficient. But I do think it gets tough for him in the playoffs. But I think this two-man game is going to be real good. And we've started to see Doc here now change his rotations up a little bit, keep those two on the floor. And I think when those two are on the floor, it's real tough to scheme against him. When we start seeing Harden's lack of burst, when we start seeing maybe Joel force things a little too much, it's usually when they're playing without the other one. And when you get into the playoffs and each of them is playing 40 minutes per night, I think they're going to have a very good offense. I do. Is there a little bit of concern just because of the history of these two? A little bit. And a little bit of concern just because Harden doesn't look the way that you hope he does. A little bit. But it's my concern is much more on the other end.
Yeah, and that's the funny thing about this, right? We all thought, oh man, are they going to fit together? And now the question is, oh man, can they play all their minutes together? Because they fit really well. They ran a play. It was the first play of the third quarter last night, and I had it in my story today, where I just thought, like, you know, Doc can get creative with some of the ways he can scheme this up. He basically ran Harden off as, like, the screener on a flex cut, and then he comes off the down screen for Embiid. Just nice little pocket pass, easy 12-footer for Joel, like, nobody in his face. Yeah. Knocks it down, and you just watch it. It's like, man, that is smooth as hell. Like, that is so easy.
He can get that every time down the floor. They can get Joel that shot every time down the floor.
Yeah. By the way, do you think, you know, I think we're starting to gauge what the current version of James Harden, like the accurate gauge of what that is. Man, is there like a more high variance player than that guy right now?
Yeah, no, he's very high variance. At his best, he looks really good. And at his worst, you worry about how he's going to create in the half court.
Yeah, and we've seen some of that on this trip. Like, I would say the beginning of that Lakers game, that first half, like, some of those drives were super ugly. And to Sean's point, this is kind of frustrating where he is just kind of throwing himself. You're frustrated with the cat right now. But it is frustrating that Harden is just, he's just running into guys looking for a foul and just barf up a shot. And when you're not getting the whistles, that's pretty ugly, and those drives look super slow. On the other hand, and we have seen this kind of, you know, every couple games, he has that first quarter or first half against the Clippers where the dude is still capable of just some absolutely like A-plus dominant stretches of offensive basketball. Just dominant as hell. Some of that is, hey, like if that step back is going in, the hamstring doesn't matter as much. He can get separation on that whenever he wants. But yeah, I would echo your sentiments on Harden. You know, when he looks bad, like, yeah, is he going to be able to create against the best playoff defenses that switch? Like, you know, the Clippers switched a little bit last night, but I still laugh whenever he plays with Niang that they don't just try and switch it and just see like, hey, like, can you get by guys? And by the way, like, he could still get separation against bad defenders. Like, he's got that, like crossover between the legs into the crossover where he's going left to right, right to left. Look, that's a good move, but yeah, I'm concerned about that.
The good news, to your point, it's more teams like Boston in the playoffs who you get worried about because why would they ever not switch that two man? And that's part of it too. Like better defenses, when we go bring this back to fouling, better defenses can switch more. They can remain competitive defensively. They can challenge more at the rim without fouling. I think it's probably more that Harden doesn't look right, and you're going up against better defenses than it is the playoff whistle. Bringing that sort of full circle.
Boston is
scary.
They're pretty horrifying. Yeah. And the good news too with the question just bringing up the past playoff struggles for Embiid, I do think he's more prepared because he's not as post reliant now. So that's not a guarantee. Like, look, playing. I think what we have learned over the process era is like, hey, once you get in the second round, unless you're playing against the Atlanta Hawks, like it should be harder. It should be harder. It always has been harder.
And even then, you can make it hard on your own.
Yeah. So
To your point, Joel's more prepared to succeed in the playoffs. And also he has a guy to create looks for him now that he never really had in the half court. I definitely expect him to be at his best, health assuming.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
And I guess that sort of that Boston discussion sort of dovetails in the next one. This one from The Process Lives. What's the best and worst case scenario for seeding for the Sixers when the dust settles after these next eight games?
So I haven't looked at how this is going to shake out because now we are just in a complete jumbled mess. I mean, wow, Miami, what a week for them.
Sixers a half game out of first and tied in a loss column.
So before this week started, when I assumed Miami was going to win games with all of their players against teams without all of their players, like, man, what a bad week. They lost to the Warriors without Steph and Draymond in addition to the Sixers loss. And then they lost to the Knicks, like, blowing what, like a 20 point, they got outscored by like 25 in the fourth quarter. And Jimmy is fighting people again, which I've seen that before. he tends to wear on people.
They were just arguing about where they were going to dinner after the game. That's it. Nothing to see here. Move on.
You know,
I think that's what Spoelstra said, isn't it? Something like that.
Yeah, something like that. By the way, just a quick aside on Miami here, just because we saw them barf up a game against the Sixers. That team's going to have trouble scoring in the half court come playoff time. You know why? Because Jimmy, he can't shoot anymore, man.
Yep.
Yeah. So, like Tobias defending him at the end of the game, I was not that concerned about it because Tobias was playing off of him. Okay. For that reason, Miami would be the ideal second round matchup. How the Sixers, like, engineer it that they get to play them now, I have no idea. Yeah. Like, I think the ideal thing would be to avoid Brooklyn in the first round, right?
Like, especially with the, you know, with Kyrie now being able to play home games. Yeah. You know, it's looking like I think you could see the Raptors moving up into the sixth slot. And then you could even see right now the Nets are three games behind the Cavs. Brooklyn goes on a run. You could see them maybe catch the Cavs. You could be looking at Brooklyn in seventh. Which, if Brooklyn is in seventh and, you know, Kyrie is able to play the home game and they have two games to win that play-in tournament, it went from like a week and a half ago, it looked like Brooklyn was going to have to win two games without Kyrie to even make the playoffs. Their pathway got much easier, much easier.
So I would argue with them kind of looking like a decent chance at the seven right now.
You might want the eight. Or the one
getting the one is like that. That seems a little bit. No, you're right. You know what you're.
You want to get to play the eight. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So and the Sixers have a chance. Like they're even in the loss column right now. It's so funny that they're even in the loss column, but everybody's games are so out of whack. And you know, they do have these two really tough games against Phoenix and Milwaukee. If they could just get one of those games, though,
because even if you look at their remaining schedule, even with those two games. In out of the four teams vying for the top in the East, Sixers have the easiest strength of schedule remaining. And like Boston and Milwaukee have legitimately tough schedules to finish out this season. You know,
the Sixers are going to get games where the teams are just going to be saying, hey, you win. Congratulations.
Yeah. No, you're right. If they can win one out of two here, they probably have a pretty good chance of, not guaranteed because there's four teams vying for it, but a pretty good chance of being the top seed. And like I said, if Toronto then can move up into that sixth spot, that could potentially be a decent matchup.
Yeah.
But so, it could also be the Nets. So,
But if you get the Nets in the six or seven seed, okay, then you avoid them the whole time. Like, that's the ideal one. Like, the Nets are 6-7. The Celtics and Bucks are 2-3. You're one. That's the ideal path. Do I think all of those things are going to fall into place? Probably not. This is super jumbled anyway, but You know, it'll be, I will tell you, like, I don't remember an East playoff race that's like legitimately this fascinating, because I remember past years where like LeBron was battling for the one seed with like the Celtics, but that didn't matter. LeBron was going to make the finals regardless. Right. Like, this actually, there's some variance in these playoff matchups here, yep, where the teams seem at least evenly matched enough where you're not going to like have a strong inclination of what's going to happen going into a series. So, yeah.
Crazy, crazy run. I'm sure we will talk more about that the next time we do a podcast.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paolo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top three things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is meme mugging now a tech? The Old Man and the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
This one from Spidey. Why can't Shake Milton just chill out and be a good player? So I'm gonna modify this question a little bit because I don't know why Shake Milton can't just chill out and be consistent. I'll modify this question to say, what does Shake Milton need to be a more consistent player? I think the answer is probably pretty obvious.
Yeah, he's got to make threes.
Yeah, he's got to make shots. He's got to make shots.
I asked Doc about this, and it's like, you know, it's very true that like didn't it seem different that like when he had the ball and he was attacking Tyler Hero mercilessly. Man, this really is turning a Shit on the Heat podcast, by the way. Whew, Tyler Hero got smoked the other night.
He gave up like 30, legitimately 30 points on like 14 for 21 shooting. It was pretty bad. Yeah.
But that's Shake with the ball in his hands, right? And that's him getting into his mid-range game, kind of using his strength to shoot over Tyler Hero. Well, that's not going to happen with James Harden. It's not going to happen even with, you know, on a backup unit with Tyrese Maxey and Tobias Harris. So
no, but it would be good and nice if he was just consistent enough where even if he's on the floor with James Harden, he might get the exploitable matchup and you can give the ball to him and have even a little bit of confidence. Even if you're not going to do it all that often because James Harden on the floor too, he would be great if he made enough shots and enough plays where he could help attack the weakest defender. He's so up and down this year. So up and down.
Well, and it's true that like you would think Harden, who's super smart, who has Thibault 2/3 of the time looking like this unbelievable cutter and dunker too, like this guy who can really make his teammates better even when his hamstring's not feeling that good. You would think there'd be a way he could exploit Shake where it's like, all right, I'm seeing all this attention. Shake's guy is helping off of me. Let me just give him a little bit of an advantage situation because that's what he needs. Like, he's not a guy who can create against the set defense. But if, like, I put the defense in rotation a little bit, he's pretty talented. They still haven't figured that out. You know, he's been playing. Like, he's in the rotation again. So that's a good sign, like, that he has been playing. I think he's been... It's been okay on this West Coast trip. Obviously, he had the great game against Miami. I said this in a mailbag last week. I would give him every chance to earn that spot, though. I really would.
Yeah. He's got the most ways to impact a game. He needs to make shots. It really is that easy. All right. And this one's from Harry. It sort of ties into that. More important player having a competent playoffs, Shake Milton or Danny Green?
That's a good question.
Here's the problem. I think the way that Danny Green would have a competent playoffs is by being 3 years younger. I don't think he can really game plan for that. There's no way he's going to get his lateral mobility back. At least Shake has a chance of making his shots. So I guess the way I would phrase this is the one who can exceed expectations and have an impact like that, I think it's more likely to be Shake, just because I don't really see a pathway to Danny Green turning back the clock.
Yeah, I agree. I don't want to crap on Danny more because we've been doing that a lot.
He just can't move.
He is struggling to move. Yeah, I mean, like, look, he's had a couple decent games, played well against Clippers last night. So I don't want to say that it, like, the ability to impact a game is just not there at all. Like,
yeah, for sure.
He could find the right matchup, and I certainly wouldn't, like, remove him from the rotation, like, for that reason. But I do agree with what you're saying.
I wouldn't remove Danny from the rotation. And I think he should probably, on average, get more minutes than Shake, just because that shooting is that important. But, like, if one of them is going to exceed their expectation, have an outlier playoff run, that could actually, like, change your complexion a little bit, it's probably more likely to be Shake to exceed your expectations.
It seems like Doc is having Danny sub for Matisse. Like, those are the two guys. Like, that's a spot in the rotation. It's the it's not the dribbling spot, I'll put it that way.
Yeah.
But I think that's where Danny's getting minutes, because, like, you see Shake is, they're taking Maxey and Harris out at the beginning of games now in the first sub, probably about 6 minutes in, and it's Niang and Shake that come in right now. So Shake is he's almost getting a bigger role than Danny right now, just because of his ability to dribble, I guess.
Yep. All right, this one from @Pudrick_Lamar. What does Joel and the Sixers have to do to solidify the MVP?
Just campaign really hard. Seems like he's doing a lot of media out here on the West Coast. I think that's a good start. I don't really know what else he can do. Like, I think whether or not he should win, I think the guy has put together an unbelievable season. And I like that he, for the most part this year, is not, like, he's been baited with these questions. He's like, look, just watch what I'm doing on the court. Like, I would love to win the MVP, but that's all I can really do. I don't really know how much is going to change over these next 9 games. Like, I think it might not hurt for Joel to, like, put up a couple 40 pointers, but I don't know. Like, you look up every night, you look up last night, he plays 28 minutes, scores 27 points. So I don't know. I think it's a lot of campaigning, unfortunately. I think that's what you'd have to do.
Well, I think if there's one thing, you know, I think a lot of this, because the stats with only 9 games left aren't going to change substantially, the end of year stats. I think what really has to change, or what can change, is the narrative. And if, you know, I think the Sixers have 3 more wins than the Nuggets right now with one extra game to play. So I think what you need, a 1 seed and 4 wins more than Nuggets, and I think you have a compelling narrative why Joel Embiid should be the MVP. Should it matter? No, you should be able to take games off and throw a couple games and do what you need to do for the playoff run. But talking about what can solidify the MVP, a 1 seed and 4 more wins in the Nuggets. I think that's, if you do that, I think it would be tough for too many voters, enough voters for Jokic to win, to vote the other way.
Speaking of the games,
it's all ridiculous. Like, that whole thing I just said is ridiculous. It's just what I think what it would take.
Yeah. Speaking of the games off, you could tell there were only a couple people that were really searching for the take of how dare Embiid and Harden sit out a game, which, like, by the way, Joe deserves a lot of credit. Like, he's missed like 3 games, 4 games this year. The COVID stuff does not count. I'm sorry. Yep. Like, if you got COVID for 3 weeks and he said that actually messed him up, remove that from the equation. I mean, he sat 3 or 4 times this year. The last 2 times he sat, it's just like, dude, you've played like 19 consecutive games. Yep. Like, you got to sit. Yep. And he has not complained about it. So that's gone, I would say, really well. Yeah. What would you say? Let's say they get the 1 seed. I think he's going to win if he gets the one seed.
I do too. Especially because Denver has stumbled a little bit here of late. I think they've lost 3 out of 4. And looking at it now, I say I think, but I'm actually looking at the schedule. And they have lost 5 of their last 8. So that has certainly helped, yeah.
Yeah, and if they get the one seed and he has a couple of more big games, like I just think he's going to win that narrative story. And, you know, like he and Jokic are so close. Like I think Jokic is having just an insane offensive season for sure. And, you know, the numbers are just kind of crazy. Giannis is kind of like with the advanced numbers too, is another guy who's just having a crazy season. But like, look, Joe gets the one seed with 2/3 of $30 million being lit on fire. That's, that's pretty hard to argue with too. So
yeah. I know there's like this sort of like rivalry here. You have three players really playing at an MVP caliber level. Only one of them can win. The other guy won last year, so you really hope Joel can get it this year. Would I think that voters are morons if they vote for Jokic? No, he's a generational, incredible, one of the all-time great basketball players who's right now at his prime. But so is Joel Embiid, and it would be nice to see him get that award. And like I said, I think the most compelling narrative you can build here over the last 9 games is to just have a significantly better, quote-unquote, better season than Denver, and that is to win the one seed and get about 4 more wins than Nuggets, which, again, I don't think any of that should matter because I think the Sixers should be able to rest, and I think Nuggets should be taking into account the injuries that they've had. The record should not be the differentiator, but I think for enough of the voting public, it will be.
Two more thoughts on that. I'm not going to go crazy if either one of them wins the MVP. I think, frankly, the top three guys are having really special seasons and deserve consideration. I will go crazy if he does not make first team all NBA. Enough. Like, if you're listening, I don't know why a person who has a vote is listening right now. This is probably mostly just Sixers fans. Put one of them on as a forward. Like, please do that. They're the three best players in the league by a mile. That's the first one. Second one, if he does win the MVP, you better win your first round series because that doesn't get announced until the second round. And there is nothing more embarrassing than getting the MVP trophy like at a press conference.
After you've been bounced. Early. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
You want the home crowd going nuts for you.
This one from Ryan Brennan. That Brooklyn game still has me shook. If we face them in the playoffs, can you help me visualize how we can beat them?
Yeah, no, I don't blame you for it having you shook. That was really bad. And that was Harden barfing all over the floor. Look, I think the way to beat them is to just like outscore them. Like Harden did a terrible job of this, but they have a lot of really shitty defenders on that team. Yeah. A lot of them.
And that game looked so bad for two reasons. First of all, you have no real way to defend Kyrie and KD. That's not really changing in the playoffs. I can't visualize that for you. The other reason is because the Sixers maybe had one of their worst games of the season in terms of offensive execution, made all of that look worse, helped Brooklyn get out in transition. It really comes down to executing in the half court, running a whole lot of Embiid, Harden pick and roll, and just daring them to try to find a way to beat them or stop that. I don't think Brooklyn has a solution to stop that. Likewise, I don't think the Sixers have a solution to stop Brooklyn, so you will have to, like you said, outscore them. But that was worst case scenario by far.
I think so too. It's like, Harden, can you score on Seth Curry? Like, can you do that? I think you probably can. I think that's doable.
A lot of people did point out that as much as Doc Rivers wanted to pick apart Hero, not quite as willing to do that against his son-in-law.
Well,
hopefully in a playoff series that will be different.
He will need to recuse himself if those are his feelings for a playoff series.
Yeah.
Dan Burke can coach the Nets series and Doc can come back after that one. Look, you got to have Harden attacking Dragic. I do think, too, like the Nets have enough bad offensive players, too, where I still think they're going to score a shit ton. But you can scheme it up a little bit better where the ball finds Bruce Brown and, you know, players of that ilk. So, yeah, no, that was the worst case scenario, though. I completely understand being terrified of it. Kevin Durant's the scariest guy in the league. He's horrifying to play against.
All right, final one here, and then we'll let you hopefully not miss your flight. This one from Hanway. Why wouldn't Doc play B-ball Paul or Charles Bassey more now that there's so few games left to experiment with our backup bigs?
Yeah, I think that one's gone. I think that's over.
There's a real easy answer for this, and it's because Doc Rivers ain't playing either of those guys in the playoffs, and he wants to get, in his mind, DeAndre Jordan up to speed. Now, DeAndre Jordan's up to speed is going 35 in a 60 lane, so I don't think there is getting him up to speed. But look, Rich and I might sit here and say Charles Bassey can contribute as much in the playoffs as DeAndre Jordan will, if not more, certainly with more upside. We can talk about that all we want. Doc Rivers is at a point where he's not playing B-Ball Paul or Charles Bassey in high leverage playoff minutes. He just doesn't trust them. I don't know why he would trust them, because he hasn't played them all year. That's a different story, but we are where we are now here in late March. It's not changing now. It's and the game where Harden and Embiid both sat and they didn't play a meaningful minute at center should tell you all that you need to know. It was, quite frankly, probably pretty obvious before then. Doc just doesn't trust young big men in high leverage playoff situations. And that, it, look, again, I don't agree with it, especially with Bassey. I think you can trust Bassey and his decision making more than you can B-Ball Paul. But I'm not the coach. It is what it is.
Those are some electric B-Ball Paul garbage time minutes in last night's game. But if you look at it now, DJ is minus 1.3 net rating, which I don't think is indicative of his play, because like he was on the plus side last night, and I thought his first half minutes were brutal.
And a lot of those minutes, especially up until the last couple of games, came with James Harden on the floor. Like, you should be better than negative 1.3 or whatever.
Yeah. But, like, look, if I don't think that's very predictive for the future, but, like, if you could get DeAndre minutes as minus 1.3, I think you, and especially you if you have that. this stagger, like, yeah, you can deal with that.
I'm a little worried there, Rich. I don't know if I see negative 1.3, especially if they keep the stagger like it is. I don't.
No, his minutes were horrible. Like, just letting Hartenstein score. Some of his offense is so weird, too. He just, like, tries to dunk from impossible angles, and it just goes off the rim.
Well, have you seen his layups? Of course he's going to try to dunk. What's his other option?
Yeah. What game? I guess it was the Lakers game where it was, like, late shot clock, and there was a switch, and I forget who it was. It might have been Tobias, and they threw it to him in the post, and he had to shoot a hook shot because, look, he actually had to shoot that shot because the clock was running down. That's not good offense.
No.
It's just not. It's not going to work.
You watch him before the game shooting hook shots. And
That should be your name for DeAndre. Like, whenever I bring him up on the pod, you just got to be like,
But again, as much as you and I might not believe in his defense or believe in his decision-making, certainly don't believe in his offense, Doc's riding with him, and he's going to be your backup big. 8 minutes per game, 8 to 10 minutes per game, every night in the playoffs. Maybe there's one night where Doc's just had enough and he puts maybe Tobias or Niang at small ball center. But you're not seeing Charles Bassey and B-Ball Paul. Certainly not at the five. It just is what it is. Anyway.
It is what it is.
It is. I think we will end on that positive note. Let Rich get off to his travels to Phoenix. Thank you for jumping on, and we will talk to you soon.
See you, man.